This is a part of our New Year, New You series, and let's talk about health management. I'm interested in the management of health, yours and mine, mental and physical. We might include spiritual also, although that's not really my area of expertise. But if you'll take these next few minutes as a gift to yourself and allow your own thoughts to join with mine as I share some ideas with you, I'd like to talk about the management of your health. Now, stress management is sort of like the opposite of health management. Some time ago, I was ready to write a booklet on stress management, and I sat down at the typewriter to get my thoughts organized and on paper. And my daughter called from school. She came home sick. I received an insufficient funds letter from the bank when the mail came, so my bank account seemed to be overdrawn. Another phone call told us that my mother-in-law had gone into the hospital for more surgery. My parents telephoned that they were coming for a surprise visit that afternoon, and I began to get a headache. Does that sound familiar? I felt very weary and hopelessly inadequate. I certainly didn't feel very creative, and I began to worry that I would not get this booklet written on stress management, and that my headache was going to get worse. In fact, by that time, it was really pounding. So I wrote in the little booklet, "Maybe the most important thing to learn about managing stress is to recognize when we have a need to manage stress." Actually, I really know a lot about how to manage stress. I've studied a lot. I really know the connection between disease and stress. I've studied all the right things, such as relaxation, self-hypnosis, yoga, biofeedback, the power of positive imagery, goal setting, time management, the importance of good diet and exercise and meditation. It's just that I seem to forget to do them. Or it seems there's too many things to do, or things that won't get done, or that must be done, or why can't I apply what I already know? If there is indeed a connection between my mind and my body and its discomforts, if there was a connection between my emotional stress and the headache that I had contacted, then I might do well to learn how to manage health, which is the positive side of disease, how to manage comfort, which is the other side of discomfort, how to manage having a cool head instead of a head that hurts. And so, since we teach best that which we ourselves need to learn, I would like to tell you a few simple and very, very practical principles of health management, and maybe I will learn them as I tell them to you. First, I'd like, though, to give you an introduction to some very hardcore physical facts. Now, these are real, and they have been around for a long time, and ever since the people began to study stress management. I want you to learn, along with me, something about your body and the stress or distress reactions that we often experience. The human body is amazing. It's a truly amazing mechanism, a wondrous organism. Your brain is so spectacular, it has an elegant design. There is, however, one small problem with this spectacular, amazing brain and its effect on this wonderful body of ours. The brain has evolved over centuries, retaining features that had survival value at various times in history. By the time humans, as we know them, had emerged 40,000 or more years ago, the circuitry to control our body functions, the old brain, was already set. Well, it hasn't changed much since then, even though we still don't now live in caves and jungles, and we're certainly not gatherers and hunters anymore. This old brain is always alert to danger signals, loud noises, sudden movements, pain, rapid changes in the body position, shifts in temperature, changes in the weather, sudden differences in light intensity, loud voices, scary facial expressions, unfamiliar smells. How many times a day in our complex and crowded lives does your old animal brain signal danger? Probably thousands, certainly hundreds of times. Well, what happens each time this danger alarm goes off? The old brain is a well-established mechanism with a real, interesting reflex, like an ingrained habit, and it prepares the body to meet the danger by either fighting it or running away from it, fleeing the danger, or in a third way not often described, becoming immobile, sort of frozen. So we meet danger in three possible ways. We fight it, or we flight, run away from it, or we freeze. To fight or to flee is generally useless in our daily lives. And so that produces further stress, setting up a vicious cycle, leaving us in a sort of a frozen state of alarm. This old brain, for example, may perceive a sudden noise as danger. It therefore sends the signal to our muscles to get tense, so that we can fight or flee. But if neither is necessary, then the increased muscle tension can lead to something like a tension headache. That probably explains what happened to me back at the beginning when I was telling you about my daughter being ill and possible unexpected company and surgery for my mother-in-law and all that piling on of extra unexpected events. This goes on, however, for pain itself then signals danger, and so the increasing headache was bringing on more fight and flight, and the head would hurt more, which signaled more danger. And so I was really on an escalating, self-induced misery trip. Still, there's more. The ears need to hear more sharply when there is a danger. So at this signal, a tiny muscle called the tensor tympani contracts, and it tightens up our eardrums, just like tightening a snare drum. The pitch of sound then goes up, and so we hear everything with deafening acuity. Now, if we lived in jungles or caves, this would be a help. We could hear the snapping of a twig or the sound of an animal approaching us. But in our busy world where noise is constant, it can make noise unbearable, and the tension increases. In one office where I have worked, the other people were certain that the copy machine got louder at the end of the week. Well, I now know that they were simply tenser. Therefore, it sounded louder, since our eardrums were tightened up to detect the danger. You see, our brains do not discriminate whether the danger is real or imagined. They just turn on this old habit, the fight or flight habit, and we get this annoying result. Well, now that's not all. There's more. We need to see better when there's danger, so the optical system clicks in. If there were a tiger attacking us, we would need all of our visual acuity we could muster. So what happens is our pupils dilate, and our peripheral vision increases, which means we see more and we see better. Now again, this would help if we were being attacked by a real tiger, or if our house were on fire and we needed to carry the piano out. But these dilated pupils can make close work very difficult, so we cannot read or write well. There's also an added factor that causes us to get perhaps upset if we're one of the kind of people who reacts to the flickering of fluorescent lights when our vision is so wide open. Well, now I have a hurting head. Loud noises are going to upset me. I cannot see as well as I could when I was calm and cool and collected. What else can happen? Now remember, the brain is instructing the body to react to perceived danger. And perceived is the key word. This means our perception. The brain doesn't discriminate whether the danger is real or not. So the body then needs more energy, since we have now sent a danger signal. We need more energy in the muscles so that we can fight or run away. Therefore, our heart rate increases to pump the blood more fast. The blood vessels in our fingers and toes and nose and ears all constrict. All the blood vessels leading to the intestines shut down. because we need all of our blood supply going to the big muscles that will help us fight or flight. Well, then come cold hands and cold feet. Our hearts may palpitate, and indigestion or stomach and bowel upsets are added to our list of growing horrible symptoms. Our bodies have this wonderful cooling mechanism. So, since we are by now in danger of overheating, a thin sheet of water spreads. We perspire even if it is not hot, and that's called a cold sweat. Another thing, you know, if an animal's fur stands on end, like a porcupine when it's attacked, the predator or the attacker can get a mouthful of fur or hair or quills. And so it is that our hair, in an animalistic type of defense mechanism, stands on end. And we even say things like, my hair stood on end. And since we don't have much fur or hair, we just get goose pimples and we begin to feel very cold. Sometimes then our teeth begin to chatter, and it is even hot. So now we're cold and we're hot and we're shivering and we're sweating and our heart is pumping furiously and our blood vessels are constricted, and therefore our blood pressure rises. Now, since we're not really physically running away or standing to fight, we just stay in that frozen state of feeling awful. Remember, there is no need at this time to digest food. And when fighting or fleeing is all that we must do, our brain has then in effect, in a very wise move, shut down our entire life support digestive system. Therefore, we may get terrible additional symptoms like diarrhea, constipation, indigestion, stomach aches, or ultimately, if it goes on long enough, leading to colitis and ulcers and other stress-related illnesses. By now, we may be feeling ill physically, as I was with my headache. So we add worry about the feeling ill, and we pile on more stress. Or better to say, we pile on more distress. You see, this wonderful brain and body have worked together to mobilize a veritable militia, an army. Internally, things are also mobilized. The glycogen stores in the liver and the muscles have been mobilized. Our blood sugar has risen rapidly. And an overstimulated pancreas then tries to fix it by pouring out insulin. And if all goes well, the blood sugar may return to normal. But usually, it goes on to overrun the limits. And after a few hours or days or weeks or months of prolonged stress, the blood sugar drops below normal. This hypoglycemic state then shows up in nervousness, weakness, anxiety, difficulty concentrating, feelings of depression. If you add all this to our own incredible, vivid imagination. Remember, the brain does not discriminate. It just takes this danger signal and goes to work. We begin to think of all the dire possibilities, and the stress response escalates and continues. Our own mind, with its worry and fear, becomes like our own torturer, judge, jury, executioner rolled into one. This all sounds bad, and we could get very angry at our bodies and minds for doing this to us. We could search out something to blame, such as work or spouses or children, on and on. How do we get out of the trap? How do people successfully avoid this reaction? Do we avoid all stress? No, the answer is in the managing of the stress, taking charge of the distress, taking charge of our brains, taking charge of our bodies, taking charge of our lives. For you see, to have no stress at all would be to be dead or asleep. Therefore, we can learn through self-awareness, self-caretaking, self-parenting, self-love. And how do we do that? How do we learn these principles of taking care of ourselves? The answer is a long and complex one. For now, I'd like us to look at a simple overview of some principles of health as I have come to know them. First, please remember it is wise to call your own doctor to help you diagnose and treat stress symptoms in your body. The principles I'm going to tell you about have been formed out of my own experience through counseling with many people, my own life and my own study of my own body, and also from the work I've done in a stress management clinic. I call these the 7 M&Ms of health. The words all start with M, so maybe you can remember the list easier. I'm certain that all of the 7 principles are necessary. All 7 are necessary to positive growth, a direction toward health, not just the prevention of disease. May I please underscore this idea? These principles are each one absolutely essential if health is your goal. And there is a difference in the avoidance of disease and the promotion and cultivation of good health. The absence of disease is not necessarily the presence of health. There is a difference. I'm really hoping to convince you that a prevention model is better than a model of crisis intervention in our health. And I'm also talking about 3 kinds of health, which are all connected, in my opinion. They are, 1, your physical health, the health of the body, its muscles, bones, and its organs. 2, your mental health, which means your thinking power, your intellect, and your emotions, your feelings. And 3, your spiritual health. I'm saying simply we cannot separate mind from body, and that the old brain, with its exquisite design for crisis management, the fight, flight, freeze, automatic response, is always at the ready. But there is every good evidence to suggest we as humans are getting smarter about the positive growth of our potential for self-caretaking and even self-healing. Here, then, are my 7 principles. First, the principle of the mouth. Then the principle of movement. The principle of meditation. Mission. Mirth. Mentors. And music. Let's look first now at the principle of the mouth. This means that whatever we eat, drink, take, smoke, or say has a lot to do with health and the condition of our body. The idea of what we eat being connected to health is self-evident. Diets and weight loss are a big, thriving business today, and I probably do not need to convince you that what you put in your mouth has a great deal to do with what your body looks like and how your body feels on a day-to-day basis. Drinking is also connected to health and disease. The word is dis-ease, the loss of ease in the body. The growing recognition of alcoholism as a national problem is evidence that drinking is connected. Drug use, whether it's illegal or prescription drug or over-the-counter drug, is also mounting as a national problem. We as a group of individuals are dedicated to the avoidance of pain. Apparently, it is that we do so many things to keep from feeling even a tinge of discomfort. In my work with people, I often help them to realize that they can and they already have survived even when in pain, and that it is the anticipation of the pain that is often the trigger that sets in motion the stress reaction to fight or flight. One of the best ways to run away from any kind of discomfort is to take some form of painkiller, whether it be aspirin, alcohol, or something stronger or more dangerous. I think of my friends who anticipate their trips to the dentist, and in their own mind they imagine the pain, and it's far worse in the imagination than it is when they actually sit in the dental chair. Well, what we eat, drink, take, or smoke, I ran a smoker's clinic for several years, and I can make the statement that what a person smokes certainly has an impact on the body and its health. This is another recognized killer in our culture. An early death, suicide on the installment plan. There's every evidence to suggest that each cigarette that is smoked diminishes the life expectancy of that person by at least 1 minute or more. Not the pursuit of health and longevity, you see. The pursuit of suicide, early death, counter to the pursuit of their health and a long, happy life. The one area that may not be as evident as a disease producer is the area of what comes out of our mouths, what we say, the words we speak. I am really convinced our words are like gods. What we say, we become. What we say, we get. What we say predicts what we are. Listen to the way you talk to others about yourself, and you will see what I mean. And listen to the way you talk inside your mind in that running dialogue of thought, and you will hear yourself predicting and establishing certain goals and possibilities. I hear my fat friends laugh when they eat the next bite of pie. They'll say things like, "Oh, this has had the calories taken out, ha, ha, ha." Or, "I'll pay for this tomorrow," or, "Who really cares?" And I hear my friends who continue to smoke say, "Well, I've tried and I just can't quit." You see, all your words are like self-hypnosis. If you really are serious about health, then change your words into words that portend health. For fat people, I have a new sign. Here's the sign: nothing tastes as good as slender feels. For smokers, I am no longer quitting smoking. I am now becoming a healthy person, a clean air breather. I live like a successful non-smoker lives. Well, our internal words also predict and set up our realities. Listen to the way you talk inside your head and how you refer to yourself as well as others. We say, "I shouldn't have done that. That was stupid." This self-talk is rarely as well-formed as the written sentences and paragraphs that we might write on paper. They're more like a stream of consciousness, which we can be aware of by focusing our attention on it. Beware when your thoughts are the kind that suggest, "Oh, what a klutz I am. What a failure he is or she is or I am. I'm just no good. I'm too dumb, too poor, too fat. Or I wonder what's in the refrigerator, or I wonder what's on TV. I'm so bored. There's nothing to do. I'm not capable. I'm not lovable. Or if he, she, it, or they only loved me, they would." These are cues to the ways that we interpret events in a way to give ourselves distress and thereby hurt our bodies. The second principle is the principle of movement. And movement as a principle of health is easy to understand. It's also easy to say that we are in agreement. We all know we should exercise our bodies in order to stay healthy. Movement of the muscles, the physical body, is necessary for health. Another kind of movement is not so evident, but it is my belief connected to health in a crucial way. The movement of our bodies, its gestures, facial expressions, the activity and the responses of our bodies are the quickest and best form of detection when we are in a state of distress. Recognizing these signals is the first line of defense. For detecting when our body is revealing stress symptoms is the early warning system we can use. Stress signals send by way of body movement or behavior might include bruxing, that means grinding of the teeth, tension in our jaw muscles, compulsive talking or compulsive silence like pouting, explosiveness in words or angry facial expressions, a strident tone of voice, a withdrawal through reading or TV or sleeping, a procrastination of jobs and other things we'd rather do, sleeplessness or sleeping too much, impotence or what I call nymphotence, no sex or too much sex or intense preoccupation with sex, stomach cramps, diarrhea, constipation, nausea, the list goes on and on. Add to it such things as the munchies and pig out attacks and drinking under the table or drinking alone regularly. daily excessive drinking and denial of it, headaches, backaches, leg aches, arm aches, chest aches, you finish the list with your own body signals. These movements or changes in your body are there, and you can become aware. Remember, awareness is the first step in any life change. The third M&M of health is the one I call meditation. This means a daily time, weekly or daily, when you can leave your worries behind to spend quiet time in thought, prayer, or doing nothing, or whatever you define as meditation. I promise you that if you can do this on a regular basis, your life will move toward health. Your spiritual belief system is bedrock for your well-being. Define it personally, but please consider it is necessary for your body's physical health. Mission is a health principle that I add because I notice that people without purpose in life, without a life mission, are really not living. The overwhelming evidence is that when a person loses aim or focus in life, they die, either emotionally or physically. A burning desire to do something, to make a contribution, to finish a task, all seem to cause a person to continue to live to maintain health. A loss of purpose seems to be a twin to illness. For example, the woman I know who was dedicated to child rearing, raising children was her purpose in life. And when the children were successfully launched into adulthood, her purpose was finished. She became ill. I suggest you think transition into your next career instead of thinking about retirement or the end of this career. There is an interesting study from the Air Force which really shows this to be true. It seems that the men who retired from the military without having another job or career lined up died, and it did not seem to matter about age of state or state of health. Losing the will to live, not having life mission, is to travel the negative road of non-health. I include mentors because every one of us needs good counselors, teachers, friends, who will challenge, intrigue, and stimulate and give us information. If you don't have someone in your life who fits that description, your mental, physical, spiritual health will improve if you will find such a person. A mentor does not foster dependence, but releases you to be autonomous and stands by while you make your own steps into your own personhood. Mirth has been connected to health many ways recently. The healing power of laughter and play is beginning to be well documented and well known. Norman Cousins wrote about this in his book, The Anatomy of an Illness, where the connection between positive emotions, laughter, and recovery from serious life-threatening illness was clearly established. So, if negative emotions provide us with distress and disease, surely then mirth and merriment provide us with the other direction toward health and stress management. Music is the final principle. Music is a great mood changer, and if negative moods stress us and distress us into disease, then changing the mood through listening to music can certainly change your approach to life and possibly give you the chance to clear up any potential illness. Remember the seven principles: the mouth, the movement, the meditation, your mission, your mentors, mirth, and music. In my own story, I could have taken charge of my life and my times. I hope you do. This is Dr. Marjorie Barlow. I'd be very pleased to get to know you better.